Episode 40 of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Recorded near minutes from episode 39. So we will continue our coverage of season 2, episode 14, titled Such Sweet Sorrow, Part 2. And if you missed it before, it was written by the same people that wrote the previous episode, which is kind of the same episode, but was made into two parts. Michelle Paradise and Jenny Lumet and Alex Kurtzman, and directed again by Olatunde Osunsanmi. And I got it right again. Look at that.
Good job.
All right. So let's move on to our nose, shall we?
All right. So depressing.
No!
So depressing, yes. All right. So first, once I scroll down, by the way, listeners, we had 27 pages of show notes this time. That's why that's why we had to split it into two episodes. So if we tried to release this as one episode, you'd probably have a 5-hour long podcast, and we would be dead at the end. So, okay, I'm still scrolling.
I know, me too.
Okay, got
someday
it.
I'll get to it.
All right. So, first is from my namesake. Well, we share the same namesake, Brian from Hawaii. And I put him first because so many people have agreed with the things that he said in his nose and hold your horses. He says there were way too many shuttlecraft in the battle. How can Discovery and Enterprise fit around 100 vessels into each of their shuttle bays? And even if the ships do have the room for that many, why would they need so many shuttlecraft in the first place? I don't buy it. And Sven from Berlin agrees.
So, remember way back when they had that 4-person launch thing? Back when Pike first got on the ship, I think?
Yeah.
And they launched from something that we were like, ooh, that's weird. Where did they launch from? How did they do that? And we thought maybe it was torpedo tubes or something?
Yeah, right.
I think it was those.
I think you're probably correct.
And that's where they're all housed.
I think you're
right. Because, I mean, the ship is huge!
Yeah.
So, that's what I think.
Yeah. I think you're right. Like, and we know from this that we mentioned in the last episode that, I should say now 2 episodes ago, covering the last episode, that Enterprise is actually smaller than, at least it's shorter in length than Discovery. And whether or not it's smaller in volume, simply the fact of the length and the way that the cells are all swept back, that gives them a lot of room to store things like those pods and probably fighters and things that we haven't seen yet. So I guess it does make sense. Now, another thing that other people agreed with was, how is it that a single blast door protects Pike from the torpedo when he's standing just a few feet away, but the explosion blows up a large fraction of the front saucer section? The explosion looked tremendous from the exterior shot.
That's what a blast door is.
Holy cow, though.
But, I'm sure it depends on the way that the blast is facing and all that kind of stuff. I mean, is it a multi-directional blast? Is it a targeted blast area? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, things can be set up to where they spray a certain way or blast a certain way, if you will. And I'm sure that, I mean, they did have more than one blast door because they said the other blast door was stuck. So they had more than one.
Yeah.
But
that's true.
I don't know. I thought that that was another one of my yeses. Mm. The way that she was like, I mean, it was coupled with a no, but the way that she was just, she just turned around and faced it.
Yeah.
And he honored her by standing there and watching.
Well, good on the makers of the blast doors because they are earning their keep.
That's right, man. That was a spectacular blast door thing.
And Fred, he agrees with this. He basically said that that was his biggest no. And he even said, my wife was saying exactly the same when we watched together. Then he says, why didn't Michael just fly in the shuttlecraft with Spock and then beam out when it was time to do the wormhole jump? That would seem a lot safer and faster than flying through space on her own. Also, they hung out on that wreckage at the edge of the battle for a long time without being pursued by the enemy, which is surprising. Well, there's kind of two points there. And the first thing about being safer, I would agree with that. I didn't have a problem with it at the time, but you know, when you say that about certainly being safer, I would agree with that. But your other point I want to mention, I had this as a hold your horses because I was like, okay, where were they exactly? And how come it seemed to have gravity? Like literally, like they were able to park on this debris. So whatever it was, and you know, I assume it was a part of a Section 31 ship, because otherwise, you know, what else would have been? But
I don't know. But I was wondering the same thing. Like, what exactly did they just land?
Yeah, and they were, like Brian says there, they were there for a long time, and so I was really not understanding this part of the episode. So,
I think. Though, I'm going to do a hold your horses on that no, because I don't think that they planned on being there that long. She couldn't get it to work.
Right.
So I think that they were really just flying along. Okay, let's find it. Okay, that looks like a good spot. And then boom. Because, I mean, it was Spock that was sort of directing the show. So they didn't necessarily know that they were going to have a spot to park it for a second, right. Or the fact that she wouldn't be able to just take off right away. Maybe they were planning on having not enough time to do things like a beam out or something. I mean, you know, your battle plan is only, what is that quote? No battle plan survives contact with the enemy, I think, is the quote. So you can plan all you like. And watching it after the fact, we're kind of like armchair quarterbacks. Why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do that? Well, because they were in a battle and they weren't planning on parking it there for 15 minutes or whatever and trying to figure out, why the hell can I not jump?
Yeah.
So that's what I think.
Well,
now I do think that, yeah, it would be safer. Oh, and grav boots.
Well, that's what I was thinking, is that it wasn't gravity, it was magnetism. So,
Yeah. They had some kind of, like, I'm sure her suit had some kind of grav boots or something. And I'm certain also that the shuttle has the same kind of capability.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'd seen them use magnetic boots more than once this season. So, I mean, it does stand to reason.
That's kind of a standard thing with Starfleet anyway, right. Isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, anytime you can't necessarily rely on gravity all the time, so you got to be able to prepare for that.
It was a part of the plot of Star Trek VI. They had gravity boots. Anyway, yeah.
Which was super cool because all that blood was floating around.
Oh, yes. Yes, the pink awesome. Blood. Which.
And has been part of several different plots.
Yeah. And.
Finally, the. What was that one called? Oh my gosh, my brain just failed me. The one where they went back in time and fought the Borg.
Oh, First Contact.
Thank you, First Contact. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were walking on the saucer section.
Right.
And homie had a, what's it called, tied around his leg that had the arm hanging off of it, those floating.
Oh, yes. Worf had the.
That's so cool. Like, yeah. Yeah. That's why Worf is the coolest. That's called improvisation.
Yeah. So, okay. So next point he brings up, and I believe somebody else had this too. I have to go back and look. The Klingon and Ba'ul ships with Kelpian pilots needed more explanation what had happened. I watched the episode twice and still don't quite understand it. I did like seeing the D7s and Klingon warriors with hair. Well, I mean, we've already seen this, but I guess, yeah, fighting for sure. Well, I don't really have an issue with the Klingons, although there is a point that's brought up in one of the voicemails that addresses this. But I will say, yeah, so how did the Kelpians learn how to pilot those fighters so fast?
I think that the Kelpians just got it done.
Like, you know, and Spock says that, like, and that was kind of like the ultimate thing that taught, you know, that made him realize what had to be done. But still,
once that threat ganglia fell out, man, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder, like, did the Kelpians conquer the Ba'ul, or did they achieve peace? And, you know, were the Ba'ul involved, or was it literally just all kick-ass Kelpians that were, you know, still in their little...
they just took the Ba'ul ships.
Yeah, still in their little hoodies. But, yeah, that's... Yeah,
that was funny.
Yeah, so I didn't have this as a no, but I did have this as a hold your horses as well. And I have to look. You will probably hear this again, this episode. I just... I'm sorry, but oh, now 28 pages of notes. It has changed.
because we keep typing notes, yeah, as we're reading.
We're adding stuff. So anyway, yeah, 28 pages of notes with these two episodes. So, you know, reasons.
because reasons.
Leland seems much less menacing and effective a threat this time compared to the last time we saw him. He wasn't a very good shot or hand-to-hand fighter. Also, why did killing this one person, namely Leland, shut down all of the Section 31 fleet? It doesn't seem logical to me for the AI to put its eggs in one basket and have all control to be in the Leland body. To that, I say, yup. It was,
and I say, hold your horses again.
Well,
or as what's his face on what's it called says, not so fast.
Well, you know, it's worth saying, and a lot of people thought that this was a Borg origin story, and to that, I have to say, hold your horses to that.
Not so fast,
but. There were some commonalities there with the Borg, and one may be that essentially, you know, effectively, Leland was acting like a queen, you know?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
They were linked together, so
yeah.
Kill one, kill the queen, kill the drones. But my not so fast is Leland wasn't as menacing, not because he got worse, everybody else got better. Duh.
Well, that's true.
I mean, if some opponent royally kicks your ass, are you just going to take it? Not if you're Giorgio. You're going to get better. So she got better.
Yeah.
He wasn't as menacing because they weren't as afraid of him. Remember what Saru said at the beginning. You're going to see a human face, but it's not a human being.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I would say that they were prepared. So.
Exactly. They got better.
Yeah. Because when something like that happens, clearly it's going to be quite frightening and you're not going to be prepared for that to happen. But they've already seen this happen and they know what happens. They saw it happen with Gant. They know what has basically happened with Leland. So they're expecting it. So, you know, anyway, his final point is that Number One gave her name as Number One during the debrief on Earth. Come on, what's her real name? And her real name is Una. And this is where I had a no. And that is not on the episode. It was on the closed captioning. Clearly, and Fred talks about this as well, on his closed captioning, it's wrong. And in the CBS All Access closed captioning, I don't know if it's from the same source or Netflix does it differently. I don't know about the Canadian closed captioning. But instead of it saying Una, like, I'm going to give you the con Una, it in closed captioning said something like, I'm going to give you the con, or something like that. And then, like, it was, I'm going to give you the con Una, and it said, I think, I'm going to give you the con, Cornwell, instead of Una Cornwell. So it was, like, really bad. So I think we're...
And the Dutch is also wrong.
Yeah.
The Dutch closed captioning.
The Dutch closed... They got it. So I would... That's where I give a no, is that for something I think as... that fans have been waiting for 50 some odd years to finally find out what is Number One's actual name, for them to screw up the closed captioning is, I think, a big, like, I shouldn't say big. It's really sloppy. They should have had it in the captioning, because I think people,
it's major.
Yeah. I think
it's major.
I think it is major. I think, you know, not enough to dock, but I think they screwed up. And yeah, the whole thing is Number One. I mean, it's still, the way I look at it, though, I think that they're going to go back. We're going to see the Enterprise again. I'm certain of it. It may be, like, whether or not it's a movie or it's on series or it's going to be in the Section 31 series, we're going to see them again. And maybe there they will have it worked out. But, like,
and that's not necessarily the fault of the episode. I think that's a post-production thing. Somebody effed up and doesn't understand how important it is. So,
yeah, I mean, this is why it is impossible to have a perfect episode. I asked one of the people, it was one of the first, I'm not going to single them out, but one of the people that only gave it a 9, and they were the first one that gave it, like, a really, I shouldn't say a really low, but comparatively really low score. And I wanted to know, you know, why wasn't a 10 or why wasn't a 9.5? And they said, well, no episode is perfect. And it's like, well, then you're not really, like, I would hate to take a course with you, because that would basically mean, well, there are no A pluses.
No kidding, man. It's like, you're right. I will never be inside your head.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what that means to me.
Yeah. For something like a TV show, it is impossible. It's just not possible to get everything perfect. It's not. I don't care. Like, I work in websites, in software, and I see that there is no perfect program. There is going to be a mistake somewhere, because it's made from humans. Humans can't be perfect. We're not Vulcans. Anyway.
That's right.
Even Vulcans, obviously, are not perfect either, because a lot of Vulcans are racist pigs. So... Even some things were questionable with Sarek, and, you know, him being able to leave Vulcan, you know, he didn't want to do it. Anyway, he's not a good example of that. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, you have logic extremists. Well, I said it in a previous episode, that is by definition illogical. Anyway, that's it for his knows. So thank you so much, Brian, for not only listing them out, but coming up with so many of them that seem to resonate with the rest of the listeners. So,
yeah.
Good on you.
Good job.
All right. Next.
All right. Next, we have James the Augmented Sailor. Let's just dispatch this section this week, shall we? I think we can all agree the only no is that the season is over and we unfortunately can't have cast and crew working year-round. Or can we? Anybody got a time crystal I can borrow? I mean, we could always have Star Trek Discovery, the soap opera, which puts out an episode every single day. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, jeez. Well, I can't that would certainly keep the CBS All Access dollars monthly good.
In the red or in the black.
But I don't think it would be very good.
No, I don't want soap opera special, Star Trek.
Special effects, I think, would be rather wanting.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah. All right. Anyway, I think, unfortunately, James, there are a few people that have some no's that I suppose are valid. But I agree with you. I think that we almost could have done without this section. Although I do have a no, but I think it's a no that everybody can get behind. Anyway, moving on to Fred from the Netherlands. Fred says, is the shortest way from the lab to engineering really via the bridge? Reno walks with the time crystal via the bridge to engineering.
Well, there's an explanation for that. And that is that the lab was originally Lorca's ready room, which is adjacent to the bridge. So it was converted.
So, yes.
Yeah.
The answer to that question is yes.
Yes.
It really is the shortest way.
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right, Fred goes on to say, one of the Enterprise bridge explosions looked so terribly fake. It was the explosion that happened under number one's console. It looked a bit like a run of a series of firecrackers. Well, I mean, it is Star Trek. We have standards to maintain.
I was thinking the same thing. And it's also worth saying that the Discovery had a bunch of things that looked like rocks on the floor. And that is
in the
time-honored tradition of Star Trek.
Yeah, exactly. In the messed up gravity scene, it looked like, I mean, it was debris
from
the ship, obviously, but it looked like rocks rolling around.
And it's just one of those things, you know, it's like even in the 90s, they had that. It's just a thing. And
I know.
I just laughed at it. I didn't really.
I know.
Yeah. You
know. I mean, it's a classic, okay?
They should make photon torpedoes out of the same material, though, that they make consoles out of. They really should. For that matter, maybe they do, but.
He included an image, too, so we can all glory in the firecrackers.
We will highlight this in the episode notes, so I will make sure, I don't know where all the pictures are going to appear in between 39 and 40, but I will make sure that this one will be in 40. So,
all right, cool.
Yeah. Mike from Cleveland says, Nan's dialogue during the Leland fight. In fact, he hated that one enough that he listed it 3 times in a row. Yeah. And it's worth saying that I had to ask, and I had this in the Hold Your Horses thing, is that where did the non-personality come from? I mean, like her saying things like yum, yum, talking about, like, you know, the idea of making Leland scream. It's like, we didn't get this indication before. It's like suddenly they figured out, well, I guess Nan's going to stay and we better give her a personality now. Now, I'll say, I welcome this. I look forward to the fact that she will probably be made a full-time cast member for season 3. And
yeah, she's clearly not going back to Enterprise.
She's going to be, you know, in the 32nd century. And technically, let's get it out there since we're on that point right now. They will be appearing in the year 3187, which is 930 years from where they are in 2257. So that's the answer. And the reason why we know this is Burnham's mom went 950 years, and that was 20 years ago. So they're going to 930. And they mention this actually in the show. But it's also confirmed with some things that Alex Kurtzman has said online.
That was something else I didn't understand. Why did they go 20 years before when her mom was?
Well, no, it's not 20 years before. Burnham's mom went 950 years, but that was 20 years ago. So that...
See, that's what I'm saying. That doesn't matter.
Okay.
That shouldn't matter, because if her mom jumped 950 years in the future, if they go 930 years in the future, they're going to be there 20 years before she is.
No, because Burnham's mom jumped 20 years ago. So it was...
20 years ago doesn't matter. If she's been in the future for 20 years, her time, and it's now 950 years later,
I think that's I one understand thing. What you're saying.
But it doesn't matter if she jumped into the future 20 years in the past, because time is the same if you're time traveling.
Uh-huh.
So they don't need to adjust for this 20 years thing. That's what I don't understand. Why did they say that? Why would they say that? I'm telling you, man. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey. That's the one thing I don't get. Why would that matter? That does not matter. Unless she is saying right now it's been 950 years.
Right.
But no, that's not what she said. She said, I jumped into the future 950. I jumped 950 years in the future. They don't need to adjust for that 20-year thing. I don't understand that. That's the one thing that did not make any sense to me whatsoever. Well, why would you need to adjust for something? If I can jump to the future... you've seen The Big Bang Theory, right?
Barely.
Okay, well, there's this one scene in The Big Bang Theory when they're going over a roommate contract, and Sheldon turns to Leland. Sheldon turns to... now I can only think Leland. Anyway, Sheldon turns to his roommate and says, if either of us invent a time machine, we will jump to this point. And they both pause for a moment. Nothing happens. So obviously, no one ever invents a time machine in The Big Bang Theory. Because it doesn't matter when you invent a time machine. You can say, I want to go to this exact moment in time, regardless of how many years pass since that statement is made. It should be that way. See what I'm saying?
To that, I do understand what you're saying. And the thing about this that I hadn't considered until you brought this up is that they don't know exactly how many... They don't know if it was 950 years to the second. They only know 950 years. So they could end up jumping to a point before her mother.
Right.
And if that happens, how...
Well, they definitely are if they're jumping 930 years. That's why I said they jumped 930 years. So maybe they are the ones that set up my brain is starting to stop.
A paradox.
No, they're the ones that set up the safe haven place. What is that place called?
Terralysium.
Yes. That's why I said maybe they're the ones that pulled Terralysium from wherever and had set it up. Unless I can't remember if her mom said she specifically did that.
She did. We didn't understand how she was able to bring them all across. I thought
that she said she used that place, not necessarily that she brought those people.
Yeah, she did.
Okay, well then I don't know why in the world they would ever need to only jump 930 years in the future.
I have a comeback, but I don't I need to think it over. So
see, that's what I'm saying. It makes my brain hurt.
Yeah.
I cannot. I'm like, what I'm saying makes absolute perfect sense to me, but maybe I'm not explaining it well, which is why I'm like, oh, it makes my head hurt. Which is why watching shows like 12 Monkeys is so much fun.
Okay. So it is her mom. Her mom, the whole thing with her mom happens in the year 2237. So she goes forward 950 years to 3187. So 20 years from that, 20 years later, Burnham.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah. It's math.
Well, yeah, but it's still, it's very inexact, because what happens if they end up there before she ends up there? Like, there's a year is 365 days. Point two. Yes, I was going to just say that.
Well, not, also depending on which particular sun you're rotating around.
Yes.
I mean, that's an Earth year.
Right. So, and, you know, do we even know that? We may not. But anyway, we're digressing. Blaine will, I don't want to.
Blaine can shut up.
Yep. We're long enough as it is. So,
yeah.
There is the question of, like, when in that year do they appear, and what happens if they appear too soon? That would be my big question there. And
well, I see what you're saying, though, about adding instead of picking a destination.
Right.
That makes more sense. Like, I'm adding 930 instead of adding 950.
Right.
Because if they add 950 from present day, that's
20 years after. Yes.
Right. I got you. Okay.
Yeah.
But I was like, I didn't understand that it was math, not picking a destination.
Oh, no, no. Well, the destination, I think, makes sense, but.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you're picking a destination, then that's the destination regardless of when you leave, right?
Right.
But if you're adding.
Hill Valley.
What?
I'm thinking Back to the Future again.
Oh.
Save the clock tower.
Oh, makes my head hurt. Right. So if you're adding, say you left for the future in 1995 and I'm leaving for the future now, but I'm only using math and I want to arrive at the same time, then I need to account for that whatever time. Mm. Holy crap. I can't even add. I graduated from high school in 1995, so I should know. Over 20 years ago, then I need to. If all you can do is add the number of years you want to travel instead of saying, I want to arrive in 2159, then yeah, I get that.
Yeah, that's why.
But why would you do that? Why would you not say, I'm going to arrive in 2159 instead of saying, I'm going to add 930 years to my.
I get your point.
It's inexact.
Well, that's what we have in the DeLorean. He puts in the exact. Not just the year, he puts in the day.
The exact date.
Yeah, the exact date and time. That
month, day,
yeah,
year. Mm-hmm.
That's why I had a whole thing, like, in a couple of episodes back when we see the time suit and she looks at her screen and it says 950. And I'm like, that doesn't compute to me. I would expect it to give an actual reading of
a year
to the millisecond, to the nanosecond, you know?
Yeah. Which I don't know how. I mean, they are not computing time based on Earth. So.
Okay. I just had a thought.
It can't be.
Right.
Because that's not standard for the entire universe.
You know, and what about those, stardates.
That's why we have stardates. Yeah. Stardates.
Oh, don't get me started on the stardates in this show.
I know. I wish they made more sense.
They make no sense at all.
I know, but I really want them to make sense.
I know.
Oh, well.
It makes sense once it gets to next gen, but this era of stardates makes no sense at all.
No sense whatsoever. They randomly picked numbers. Yeah,
that's all it is. Anyway, okay, let's get back to this.
Arbitrary.
So arbitrary, yes.
Similar to my radio.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so Ken from Chicago, he says, if JoJo won her fight, why did they need to complete the plan? Well,
I was wondering.
Spock says that they need to close the loop.
Yeah.
So I believe that is why that the only it would by still having the sphere data there, it seals it to basically say that the only way that they could guarantee that you couldn't have another
control happen
or some alien race, you know, try to get the data, right, is to send it into the future, far distant future. So that's where it makes sense to me. So
right.
That's my thought. That's why they had to do it. But I did have a moment where I asked the same question. I did. And Ken also says, again, people dawdling while there's a ticking time bomb. We saw less of this this time, but yeah, I some people mentioned that, like, Spock and Burnham had a bit of this, but you know, whatever. I don't think it was that bad. We have one final no, and I'll just read this one, I guess. Rick from Cleveland says, killing Admiral Cornwell. The way she went was honorable, but no. Her death only seems to have meaning in advancing Pike's story. I don't know. I think they had to kill someone to give it meaning, but you know, I certainly didn't like to see her go. I thought that she might actually play a role in the Section 31 series, but I guess not now. So
I was mad about Admiral Cornwell's death. That was my only no. Yeah. Not for the same reason as he gives.
Oh, well, what reason did you give?
I was just mad that she was dead.
Oh.
I don't think her death only seems to have meaning in advancing Pike's story. That's what I disagree with.
Oh, okay.
That's what I meant. Not the same reason.
Okay.
I mean, not the same reason it was a no. It was a no because I really felt that no! Because Admiral Cornwell died. But I agree with him. The way she went was honorable.
Well, the point that I had in my hold your horses, my thought on that I didn't understand was, why could she not, like, get beamed out, you know? That was the part that I didn't understand, is that, yes, I know that they can't beam when the shields are up, but that's outside of the ship. I would think inside the ship they could beam.
Yeah, that we've seen sight to sight.
Yeah, we saw it on Discovery. We've seen them do it multiple times, actually, on Discovery. We would think
that's a good point.
We would think Enterprise has that, but that, yeah. So I didn't understand why they
Enterprise is a less advanced ship. Remember,
seems that way, but
clearly,
except for the DOT sevens or whatever you call them,
the DOT
sevens, yeah. R2D2s. I mean. Or the BB-8s.
Oh, come on now.
Oh, it's fine. I didn't have a problem with it, actually.
I didn't either. I loved
it. Yeah. And it made sense. What I did wonder about, and I don't know if I had this in the Hold Your Horses, but I should have. Why couldn't the DOT-7s take the torpedo out?
That's a good question. Or why couldn't they go in and do the blaster? It's too complex. Yeah,
For them. Yeah, well, that's a good point. You know, had a bot go in there and do it. Mm. You know? That
Yeah.
Good
point.
I hadn't thought of that point, but that's a better.
See, this is why we don't analyze too much.
Oh, who are we kidding? Okay. So you've been really, really psyched about them going to the future.
Yes.
I'm not so sure about this. Still, I wonder, by setting them 930 years into the future, are they actually basically creating their own problem again, so that every show that they make past season 3 of Discovery is hampered by what is going to happen in the distant future? Like,
that is a good question.
Yeah, I would have preferred, I love the fact that they're going to the future. I would have had them go to a time parallel to Picard. That would have made the most sense, but they don't.
Maybe they aim for 930 years in the future, but they don't make it there.
I am hoping that that's what happens, but we don't know. So
that does make more sense.
Yeah.
Logistically.
Yeah. Speaking. Because if they were to go into the same time frame as Picard's story, will they are not held up by canon at all. They can actually build on each other.
Uh-huh.
So why do that? Why do they have to go so frickin' far into the future? That is my point. So while I applaud them going to the future, going to the far future, any show that comes in that, you know, supposedly Picard's going to be 2399. So that's effectively say 25th century, because by the time they're in season three, it'll be 25th century. So, because that would be 2401 is when the 25th century starts. So anything that comes to that, you know, like if the Federation, you know, gets wiped out in the 32nd century, if things are all hunky-dory in the 25th century, you know something's going to happen that's going to blow everything up, and you're stuck with that. So, and if you want to go 100 years in the future, you're still stuck with you. Anyway, that's my point, is they're potentially hampering anything that comes after season three of Discovery. So while I do applaud them going to the future, I don't like them going this far into the future. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. All right. So with that, let's go to our favorite segment.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the hell? What the hell? Hold your horses.
All right. So I read Brian's nose. So why don't you read Brian's Hold Your Horses?
All right. The causality loop of Michael sending the signals in order to make it possible to have a chain of events that led to the capability to build the suit and send the signals is paradoxical. It does not compute.
Yep.
I said it before. Causality loop.
Yep. You did.
Yeah. So they had to know where they were going in order to know where they should go, basically.
And to me, it makes sense if you consider a causality loop, the fact is they couldn't go forward in time to the point that they wanted, because that time would not exist without them sending the five signals that had to be sent. So it was all dependent upon them going, like, basically there was a temporal incursion that they created that allowed that future, that present to exist. So if they did not do this, what their current present could not exist. So they had to go into the past, into those five time periods, and send the signals. Now, what it doesn't explain, and I'm sure someone's going to say this, is what about those seven signals to begin with? Like, how did they know that there were seven signals, and where were they, and how come they were able to sense those but not the rest of them?
Okay. You should watch that video. It's 18 seconds.
Okay. I'll go ahead and watch it because, okay.
So now you know, every time I say wibbly wobbly timey wimey, that's what I'm talking about.
What is the story behind that?
Oh gosh, it's such a good one. It's kind of a one-off. It's sort of a bottle episode,
okay,
I guess, if you will, of Doctor Who. And it's one of the best ones ever. And it involves the Weeping Angels, who are scary as shit, because they only move when you're not looking at them.
Hmm.
And the episode is called Don't Blink. Because every time you blink your eyeballs, they move.
Oh, and that's...
And they change.
That explains why...
That's why the episode... Yeah, that's why it's called Don't Blink.
Yeah.
Yep. So they go, and what the Weeping Angels do is they send you... Each one of them has a different timeline, basically, or time period or whatever that they send you to. So if they touch you, they send you there. So okay. If somebody you love or whatever gets sent away, you have to find the right angel to touch you so you can get sent to them. Now, the Doctor's got a time machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's got the TARDIS, which is time and relative dimension in space. So he... Something happens and he is locked out of it, There's a key, and he has to get to the key. And so that explanation is, and this is another causality loop, which is why I love the whole wibbly wobbly timey wimey thing, because he only knows, well, I don't want to tell you because I want you to watch it. And it's an episode that you can watch by yourself, by itself, without having to necessarily have seen every other episode of Doctor Who, I think, because it's just kind of, it doesn't have all of the normal characters and the normal things in it. It's kind of like its own sort of, it really is like a bottle episode. But anyway, it's spectacular.
In college, I had a roommate, Jonathan. I don't think he listens, but maybe he does. Anyway, Jonathan, I love you, man, but you spoiled Doctor Who to me because he watched Doctor Who religiously as much or even more than I watched Star Trek. And, you know, watching those 70s and early 80s versions of Doctor Who and their cheesy, cheesy special effects, it spoiled me on Doctor Who. And I tried to give it a go on Netflix a few years back, and it got silly on me in the first season. And although I enjoyed a few episodes, I couldn't keep going forward with it. It lost me. So,
okay, take my word for it, as you finally did with Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
watch it.
Okay.
It is so good. And yes, it takes place in the, 2005? That's the one you should start with, 2005.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it's 15 years-ish old. And, yeah, 15 years-ish old graphics. And it's also a British production show. So it's also, the humor is somewhat askew from ours, or askance, I should say, from ours.
I understand whatnot, British humor.
Stuff. Right, I do too. But it's not just British humor. It's the production.
Right.
Like, there are some things that I'm watching it and I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen a show do that before. Well, it's because I haven't watched a whole lot of British produced shows similar to this one. It's kind of a thing. I don't know. It's just a thing that you just have to be aware of and move on. Yes, the first season is very, the 2005 season is very kind of, so much stuff is set up in that first season that will carry out for many seasons to come. So good. So good.
All right. I'll.
And I don't want to. I just go watch Don't Blink.
Okay.
Just watch that one episode. Just watch Don't Blink.
Okay. Is that a Christmas episode or is that a?
No.
No.
Nope.
Okay.
It's just a random bottle episode from like season 4, maybe. I got to look it up now. But anyway, every time I say wibbly wobbly timey wimey, it's because of that.
Okay.
And I don't want to tell you why, because it'll ruin the whole episode.
Okay. Did we say the second point?
No.
Okay.
I got distracted and I wanted to tell you. Because every time I think about the causality loop, I'm like, okay, so they knew where to go because they knew where they went. So who originally came? It's like the chicken and the egg. Who originally came up with the where to go? We don't know. We may never
reasons.
Know. That's right. That's exactly right. It's reasons.
Reasons.
Because of reasons.
Yeah. And you know what? Those reasons?
It's a trap!
I finally fixed that sound effect. So I used to have to go to a different soundboard app to play that, but I finally fixed it.
That's awesome.
So anyway, and then Brian mentions the point I kind of mentioned just a couple minutes ago, sort of. Want to read that one? Or are you still distracted?
Yes, I do. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. As I was saying, Brian from Hawaii's next hold your horses is, how does she send the signals exactly? Is it just some kind of emission due to the wormhole jump itself? Upon returning to the present after sending the 5 signals, why is it that Michael is now able to unlock the time suit's future-going function? I don't get it. I think this critical part of the plot suffered from lazy writing.
Aww. Well,
I cannot explain that away.
Well, okay, so there's 2 points to that. So the emissions, like the signals themselves, I don't know. I think that's a good point to bring up. I don't know what the answer to that is. How she was able to unlock the time suit's future going function. I think we just explained it. That basically there was a time paradox that couldn't be solved until those first five signals got sent. So she had to go back in time five times to get those people to basically pick them up along the way so that they could get to the point, because otherwise no Jet Reno, no Boreth, you know, no Time Crystal, no Poe, no Kelpians, and no Tyrellisium, right? So all of that was
right.
All of that was critical to them getting to that point, because otherwise,
yeah, what was happening right at that exact moment couldn't be happening because that other stuff didn't happen
right,
first.
Exactly. So that is the answer, Brian. That they
and it's what Spock said. He said we have to close the loop.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that all of that had without that. Without those things in place, the future that she sees would have happened, right? So it was critical to it happening. So anyway, that's my point. So the signals themselves, I don't understand, but I do understand that. So Sven from Berlin kind of augments, so to speak. I'm looking at the next person on the list, so I think of augment. But he says, yes, there have been questions, Brian, from why, and he adds to it, what does Michael really do when she was speeding through time, except just being there? Well, going through a wormhole, perhaps?
I think that just being there was the whole...
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, nothing really happened when we saw those signals throughout the season in real time.
Right. The number of shuttlecrafts. Yep. It is like 200 is a lot, but we don't know how many they had. And I think it is worth saying that I think that shuttle bay is pretty big, at least with the, well, with both shows, both ships. So, I mean,
that stuff could have been stored like in the basement of the shuttlecraft.
Yeah. Well, the fighters yeah, certainly.
That's what I'm talking
about. And for that matter, there would definitely be a lot. But the question that I would have is, like, how many of Discovery's crew were on those shuttles and were in those fighters? That would be my biggest question. Like, so how many people actually went to the future? We don't know yet, so.
How many of them were unmanned drones?
I had thought about that.
But then you still have to have a pilot piloting a drone. So I think it makes more sense to have a person in there. Because where are all the pilots sitting?
Maybe they're on Discovery? Or the Enterprise?
Yeah, but where? If that were a thing that were actually happening, wouldn't we see them maybe once or twice?
Maybe. In the
drone
lab?
The room full of drone pilots. Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, like, here's the room full of drone pilots.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They are in an office in San Diego.
You mean San Francisco?
Yeah. Well, yes, San Francisco. I was specifically thinking of like current U.S. military, but
right.
Yeah. All right.
But since the Federation is based in San Francisco,
that's why your answer was better than mine.
I was right. I was less right.
Yeah, I was less right. Well, I had the right state. And I had the sand and, part.
Right. The prefix.
And it ends in O. There you go. So anyway, how do the Kelpians learn to go to space that quickly?
Bubble taught them.
I don't know.
They subjugated the Ba'ul.
Yeah.
Ba'ul teach them.
We know that Saru is a quick study, so maybe all Kelpians are that quick of study. I don't know.
Maybe so.
Maybe the Kelpians went back in time.
Maybe they did.
Who knows? I do not know the answers to that, but maybe the Kelpians fighters are so capable that they literally advanced by thought. I don't know. So they are easy to learn. I don't know. And then the explosion turbolift door protecting Pike question. Well, it wasn't a turbolift, but it was a blast door. And yes, I had wondered about that myself because it really did seem to be one hell of a door, which is going to be mentioned in our voicemails. So let's move on to our next one from James.
James, the augmented sailor, says, "Man, the Kelpians and Ba'ul really made friends fast after the forced evolution. Or did they just say, yo, these ships are ours now, and just and totally just snatched, or as my kids would say, yeeted them?" Okay.
I had to ask him, like, what is that word?
Yeah, seriously.
Apparently the kids say it. I don't get it, but yeah. But
I want to know what it evolved from.
Yeeted them with a
yeeted?
Well, I mean, you said it correctly. That's how he pronounced it when he in a message. He said that's how you say it, but I don't get it. I honestly don't.
I don't know.
Those with kids, you can respond. We are childless, so yeah. We don't understand such things.
That's right. I cannot keep up with current ways that people speak because it's foreign to me. And get off my lawn! And
I don't even have nieces or nephews, really. So, you know.
My nieces and nephews, I think, might be too young. Well, some of them might be too young to... Anyway, I don't know. Anyhow, I want to know what the etymology of yeetedom is. Somebody, please tell me. Okay. Anyway, James goes on to say, "We're really trusting this many people with the secret of discovery control and the spore drive? Dude, that's too many people knowing about this. They're going to have to kill a lot of them or something because somebody might get drunk and talk or something. This is not a no, though, because I get why the need to silence the minority that needs explanation why future Spock and fam never mentioned Michael. It also seemed in part one that Discovery was running a skeleton crew, whereas part two, it seemed fully staffed from what we saw in sickbay, wondering where when they all came back aboard." See, it's not just me. I thought the same thing. I thought it was a skeleton crew in... I mean, that's way more people getting hurt in a skeleton crew than should be.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, that was not well defined. And, and to me, there had to be some people that said, oh, hell no, I ain't going to the future. I'm going to see my kids. Okay. That sounded really wrong. But my point being, people have families, you know, they're going to want to go meet up with their families, not, you know, go right. 930 years in the future.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So. So apparently Urban Dictionary, says that yeet means to discard an item at a high velocity.
Okay, but how is what I really want to know. Did this come about? How did yeet, the etymology of yeet is what I want to know.
I don't know.
See, that's what I'm saying. I understand what it means, not why. That's why it means that is what I really want to know, basically. Why does yeetedom, like, who did someone shorten a word at one point in time, and then it got shortened again, and then it got, like, turned into, or something, like, grunts, and, like, it's turned into, that's what I want to know.
And for the record, Ruthie is silently judging your grammar, but not so silently in this case.
No, I'm completely okay with slang. I get it. Slang comes around, and it is what it is. Slang is not meant to be proper grammar. I just want to know how that phrase came along. Did some celebrity one time say it and everybody else is now saying it or something? Like chillax. Where did chillax come from? I understand it's a combination of chill and relax.
Where did Netflix and chill come from?
I don't know. But. You see what I'm saying?
And like, what, I want to know. And what are you watching on Netflix to cause you to chill in that way? And why is chill? Anyway, I don't get it. I'm showing my age.
Totally, dude.
that
grandpa.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn.
I remember when watching Netflix meant watching movies.
I remember when watching Netflix meant you actually got a disc in the mail.
Oh yeah. By the way, have you ever forgiven Netflix for that?
No.
This was a conversation from many years ago. So, and I remembered it. Okay, so that was the one thing that I didn't understand with the Spock thing and, you know, the brilliant maneuver of, like, basically making everything that could be said about the Spore Drive and Discovery and Burnham to be treasonous. But mm-hmm. How would, like... That's everybody in Starfleet, but what about other people? What about what's his face, Harry Mudd? Because you know he's not gonna be up with that. And you know, what about the Klingons? What about, you know, other species that have seen the Spore Drive in action? I really wonder about that. I think somebody said that. And the other thing, sickbay. I guess Pollard did not know at the moment that what's his name, Culber was on Discovery.
Why would she not know?
Although,
that?
Well, see, that's the whole thing. Okay, so Culber has been reinstated. Okay, so like this is a whole CMO problem. So we
CMO
chief medical officer. So Culber was supposedly not the chief medical officer. And he has 2.5 pips. He's a lieutenant commander. Pollard maybe was the CMO. She only has 2 pips. She's a lieutenant. So does that mean that since Culber's been reinstated, is he more senior and is he CMO now? And, you know, what happened to the CMO from before? These and other questions must be, all they have to do. Hey, season 3 writers. I got it for you. Okay. Just explain that the CMO went back, did not come with them, and that they have to make a CMO, and they make the make Culber CMO. There. Done. We don't need an explanation. We don't even need to know who it is. Just Dr. Schmo goes back
Dr.
home.
John Smith.
Or Dr. Schmo was one of the people that got sucked out the airlock, although that's not it because they didn't have the right uniform on. But maybe the chief engineer was one of the people that got sucked out in the Giorgio non-Leland scene. Maybe the chief engineering, the Chang, was one of them. Let's just get Reno to be chief engineer, get Culber to be CMO, and be done with it.
Yep.
There you go. You don't even have to pay me for it. I'm just throwing it out there.
That's a freebie.
It's a freebie. I'm trying to help you.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
All right. Donna from the internet. She says, I thought only the bridge crew committed to going with Michael. Yeah, she says a similar thing. It seemed like the ship had a full crew. Michael not catching a ride with Spock before releasing the wormhole, that seemed risky. I agree with the last part there. Plus, the Klingon crew now knows the Chancellor lied about Tyler. He is alive, and they're still following Laurel? That seems unrealistic in the whole Klingon character.
Oh, crap. I forgot about that.
I forgot about it as well. That is mentioned later in the... voicemails with an explanation. So,
okay.
And just a tidbit, when Paul is brought back in the sick bay, the big head alien is on a bio bed injured. And then shortly after, the same crew member is on the bridge. I can answer that one. There are 2 of them. Oh. We had seen that there be 2 of those, crew members on the bridge at one point. So that's the answer. Was one was in sick bay, one was on the bridge. Then she says, despite any questions. End of season two did not disappoint. The battle scenes, lighting, music, special effects, and acting. Wow, so many great things. And seriously, how can they not have a Pike Enterprise in the future? Although Spock looked like a baby without the beard. They totally set it up at the end. Well, I don't, when she says in the future, is she thinking 930 years in the future? Is that what she means?
No, I think she just means...
have a show in the future?
Yeah,
for us?
I do not see that show. Yes, our future.
Yes.
The real world.
Yes. Well, I have to think, based on the fan reaction, that CBS is going to do whatever they can to make that happen. You know, hopefully they'll get those three. You know, if they can't get all, they have to get Pike and they have to get Peck slash, you know, so Anson Mount
and
Ethan Peck.
Rebecca Romijn.
Well, we don't know when she leaves though. So it would be possible.
So then let's get her.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying that she's not a requirement to like finish up a 5-year mission, but I would say that
can
she has to
make
be
her a requirement.
You know, no, what I'm saying is that she has to be there, but not necessarily be on the series, if there is a series. But she should be there at least, you know, to guest star or something, and then get killed off or, you know, transferred to a different
bite your tongue.
Transfer to a different command as captain, because I think that would be good as well. But we know that she doesn't take over as captain of the Enterprise, but that doesn't mean that she didn't become captain somewhere else.
She could have gone somewhere else with Pike.
Maybe.
Whenever Pike left. I mean, Pike didn't stay the captain of the Enterprise forever. Number One obviously went with him. So Number One has to be there. End of story.
I want her to be there. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to throw her under the bus. Okay. Let's move to Fred.
Okay. Fred from the Netherlands says, I thought getting a better understanding between the Kelpians and the Bellul would take decades. And here we see the Bellul show up together with Serana. So I agree on this with James the Sailor. We know it's Tilly, but still, an ensign asking the acting captain for words of wisdom in a tense situation? Really? A bit out of line, I would say.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was a little strange. But I liked it. I didn't have.
How else are we gonna get Sun Tzu?
I liked it, so I didn't really have any issues. Certainly not a hold your horses for that. Mike from Cleveland, he says, so we're sending Discovery and her crew to the future to protect the Sphere's files because they can't be deleted or removed, but JoJo has already removed them from Discovery. What you talking about, Willis? So what did I miss? And then he says minus 1 point. So this is the reason why he gave it a 9. That part, I think, was certainly confusing. I am thinking, however, that she did not remove them, but instead move them into some kind of protected memory or subsystem that would make it more difficult to be removed. So,
or maybe you can't access it without that thing or something. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, it can't be that easy,
right?
To just, oh, are you looking for it? It's right here in this little thing. Well, no, it's not. It can't be.
Right.
So she had to have done something. And the reason I think that is because, remember back in the beginning of the episode when she was talking to Saru about laying a trap for old Leland?
Yep. Yeah, she had a plan.
Because she does not leave things like revenge to chance.
Yeah.
No.
Yes, revenge is a dish best served cold.
Ice cold.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that she had it in plan. She figured out a way to load it into the spore system, the spore drive, and then from that, she was able to, you know, basically lock him in there. So...
see, and I think, though, that whatever she did, I don't think Control Leland necessarily knows that Discovery and the Sphere data are integrally linked.
Right.
Right?
Right, yeah.
So she could be like, ha, you can't get to it because I put it on this little thing, even though the rest of us are like, what? I think that's all for his benefit. He doesn't understand that it's not that easy to just take it out of Discovery.
You know,
I think
it is worth saying, though. And, you know, he's supposed to be an AI. Like, why can't he just like do a Borg thing and like stick his hand out like a Borg would and like, you know, interact with Discovery? Like, why couldn't he check those things himself?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's not a perfect episode. It's the sum of its parts kind of thing, just like last week. Anyway.
The sum of the parts.
Yeah. I will read the next one. Rick from Cleveland. I'll take the Cleveland contingent. Astromech droids. He says, Astromech droids? Sorry, that's a Star Wars thing. Well, it's now a Star Trek thing, too.
That's right. We have co-opted the things, the DOT-7s.
Yes.
Whatever things.
So now that's a thing. So now, you know, Picard series could have them. Maybe that's a thing in the Picard series. Maybe the whole thing is based on these DOT-7s, which will be DOT-12s by the time, you know, or DOT-152s.
Or something.
Or something. Reasons. All right. Next, read the last one from LT.
All right. LT from NC says, where did all those shuttles come from? I saw it coming with Cornwell as soon as they showed the manual release handle, but it still didn't make it any easier to lose the character. The thing is, so just dropping the door kept the torpedo from doing more damage? We all wondered how the Spore Drive / Spock sister thing would get resolved, and I can see Starfleet being able to button up the story. But did they make the Klingons and the Kelpians sign NDAs?
Yeah. I love the NDA question. Yep.
Yes, they did. Oh my goodness. We were all worried about how Leland Control Bot was going to be tied up, but they took his nanite-laden carcass with them? They demagnetized him. So how are they going to get Georgiou back if she is going to be in a Section 31 series? Brian, didn't you have something to say?
Yes, I did.
You already said.
That I already said.
All right, cool. So yeah. See previous comments.
Yes. All right. What do you have?
I was going to say also, as far as the manual release handle thing, I thought that too. When I saw that manual release handle, I was like, oh. But yeah, it made me sad. I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I still am mad about it. Okay. Yep. So this whole wibbly wobbly timey wimey thing. Wormhole to the future, is that different from the one to the past? Because why did she have to shoot off like she did? Or was that just for the benefit of Discovery following? Because she just went boom from right where she was for the jumps to the past for the signals, right? But when she took off for the future, it was like she literally took off.
She was towing.
Oh, okay. So it was... So that was specifically for the whole, for a Discovery thing, for the benefit of Discovery,
I would basically have to think so. Otherwise, I'm not really sure. It is a decent point to make, but I don't, beyond that, I don't know why, but it is a good point because yes, it was instantaneous. I don't know. Maybe could it maybe be because she had to hold the wormhole open longer?
I don't know, but it didn't seem like she had much control over that wormhole.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but in thinking about my next hold your horses, which was, why wouldn't she want him to be in the shuttle? I remembered, oh yeah, he originally wasn't supposed to be in the shuttle. So whoever said that whole, wouldn't it be safer for her to be in the shuttle? There was originally not supposed to be a shuttle. She was just supposed to jump out there. But Spock changed it at the last minute.
The thing that I'm really wondering, though, is that in Calypso, Discovery has a shuttle just delivered. So when was that shuttle delivered?
I would say that time may be relative to a computer, or they don't necessarily perceive it the same way a shuttle just delivered could have been just delivered 100 years ago to, or I mean,
could have been on standby
to something that's been around for thousands of years. Just is relative.
Yeah.
That's what I think. But yeah. But seriously.
But that would indicate that that would indicate though that a shuttle had was still remaining.
Yeah,
on
well, we don't know
Discovery.
What's going to happen 18 years in the future. So maybe.
All I want to know for sure is that in 3187 they're able to put a door back on the shuttle bay. That has bugged me all season long. Man.
So anyway, but yeah, that whole why wasn't she flying in the shuttle thing? Because there originally was no shuttle, right?
Yeah, it's a good point. Because originally he was going to just do it over con.
So, yeah. Or over comms, whatever. So, but why didn't she want him to be in a shuttle? What was the whole thing? Just to be stay out of the battle? All right, well, that makes sense.
I think so.
But my real thing was about that whole, that's why she wasn't in the shuttle. Because she was never supposed to be a shuttle. Yeah. All right. Oh, yeah. Why did they have to drop the shields? I thought that they could let things out like shuttles and such without having to drop shields.
Hmm. Uh-huh. That's a good point.
I don't know. The seven signals. How did they know about all seven signals? I think somebody already talked about that. But I want to circle back around to it. Because how did they know about all of the signals? How did they know there were seven? If some of them haven't even happened yet.
That is a question that did not get explained.
Well, I'm
going to
need somebody to explain
it. That is the big question. Well, and it is mentioned that in the first episode, Pike right away mentions that these seven signals appeared and then disappeared. So why did they appear? Does that mean that Burnham went back in time another seven times just to show signals and then, you know, make them go away? I don't understand. So
my very last one was about when they were describing what happened to the whoever that guy was whose mouth really looked familiar but I couldn't place it with a face. I really, really hope that they did not all describe things the exact same way. Because when you describe things using the exact same words, you are recounting a story, not memories. Like something that someone told you in the vein of, let's get our story straight. Which is a surefire way to have someone say they are not telling the truth. Someone who's smart anyway. Because if you and I experienced something, the same something, neither of us will explain it the same way. But if we use all the same words, then that was you and I getting our story straight. So, and it seemed like that's kind of what they were doing when they were showing, basically, it seemed like different characters were relating the story, but it all made sense. I mean, maybe they weren't, but... You know, I mean, was Pike about to say boom when number one said boom? I don't know. Maybe not. But still, again, it's not just same words. It's vernacular. So I don't know. Just something I was thinking of.
I think it's a good point, though. I mean, they did say at least that part differently, but we also heard them say certain things the same.
Well, and I mean, so, the way that they did that, it sort of implied that they were all saying the same thing. So, I don't know. I think so.
Is that it? Okay. So, I'll just go through these quickly. How long did Spock go without putting on the uniform? Did he put the uniform on and then shave one day, or did that happen altogether? That's a good question. And, you know, like, was he That's
how long had he had a beard beforehand? Because the look she gave him when he showed up clean shaven was like, but then was the look for the beard or the uniform?
I don't know. That's mm-hmm. a question. Chicken versus egg. Beard versus uniform.
Bearded Spock.
Okay, so the whole thing about shields. We know that the shields were down because Tilly had to put them back up. So Spock, I think, could have beamed to Discovery. I mean, the fact that he, you know, beamed to Enterprise, that's one thing. But I would think that he would have been able to beam to Discovery. So I was a little confused about
that.
Well,
I think Tilly already had them up by then. They were already going.
I don't think so. Not the way it was edited. Well,
because
anyway.
They weren't down all the way. They were at 11%.
Oh, okay.
But then they popped. That's true. They fixed that shield emitter, and it went back up to like 40-something%. But I don't think it was 47.
It wasn't 47. It was 40. Yeah. So okay. Well, that you've actually explained it quite well there. If the shields are up in any capacity, he wouldn't have been able to beam over. So that makes sense. 0.004 arc seconds. I did not buy the fact that I like the line, but I didn't buy the fact that number one couldn't understand that, because she's intelligent. She should have been able to understand exactly what that was. Now, I would have understood it if, like, Pike said that, speak English, right? Because we already know that was it temporal mechanics? What astrophysics? I think Mark was an F, but
right.
So it would make sense that he wouldn't get it, right? Yeah, but not number one. That was weak to me, and I don't know why they. It could have been one of those things where, for some reason, they changed it, but it was originally his line.
Maybe. I think they just wanted to make her like a, I don't know what the female equivalent of a good old boy is, but kind of like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Does this mean that Sun Tzu exists in both the Prime Universe and the Mirror Universe?
Apparently.
Yeah. Last thing has to do with Cornwell. Okay, so we already talked about the fact that couldn't she have been beamed out? That's fine, but and I gather the fact that she seemed to know that she was going to die here, but she seemed to also understand very much that Pike wasn't going to die, and that she could sense that. He knew.
Touched the time, like, crystal too.
I had to ask. That's what I had in here. I said, "Did Cornwell take a time crystal too?"
You? I'm not looking at the doc right now.
And maybe, yeah. Well, that's the point. It's like maybe she knew. Maybe in her, you know, she touched the time crystal and she saw that she was going to die this way. Maybe that's why she was accepting her fate so well. But. Would make sense. All right. That's it. Why don't you just tell people how to reach us?
All right. To submit your theories and feedback or connect with us, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. Or you can call us at 304-837-2278. Or you can email us at StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. Or you can post in our Facebook group where we have designated episode threads for the episodes, which is facebook.com/group/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. Or you can tweet us at StarTrekGSM.
A great way you can support us, at least until we do a Patreon, which we're going to do a Patreon, is you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple. And while you're there, give us a rating or review. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, just go ahead. And if your podcast client allows you to leave ratings or comments or what have you, just go ahead and leave us something in that And hopefully we will get it and respond. So that's it for this episode, the second of three. Our next episode will be covering the feedback and some news that has been released, mostly on the Picard series, but there's a couple other things. We'll have that next time. So until then, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And I'm Visual Feedback Fred.
Please take a look at our blog posts. And if your podcast client lets you see the episode notes, you'll see all the wonderful images that Fred creates for us from the episodes. And it's quite a visual treat. So I want to make sure all of you know to look at that, because there's going to be some amazing images for this these next two episodes. But until then, peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.